At that moment, Sonny noticed that the other car had not kept going, but had parked a few feet ahead, still blocking his way. At that same moment, his lateral vision caught sight of another man in the darkened toll booth to his right. But he did not have time to think about that, because two men had come out of the car parked in front and walked toward him. The toll collector still had not appeared. And then, in the fraction of a second before anything actually happened, Santino Corleone knew he was a dead man. And in that moment, his mind was lucid, drained of all violence, as if the hidden fear, finally real and present, had purified him. Even so, his huge body, in a reflex for life, crashed against the Buick door, bursting its lock. The man in the darkened toll booth opened fire, and the shots caught Sonny Corleone in the head and neck as his massive frame spilled out of the car. The two men in front held up their guns now. The man in the darkened toll booth caught his fire, and Sonny's body sprawled on the asphalt with the legs still partly inside. The two men each fired shots into Sonny's body, then kicked him in the face to disfigure his features even more, to show a mark made by a more personal human power. Seconds afterward, all four men, the three actual assassins and the bogus toll collector, were in their car and speeding toward the Meadowbrook Parkway on the other side of Jones Beach. Their pursuit was blocked by Sonny's car and body in the toll gate slot, but when Sonny's bodyguards pulled up a few minutes later and saw his body lying there, they had no intention to pursue. They swung their car around in a huge arc and returned to Long Beach. At the first public phone off the causeway, one of them hopped out and called Tom Hagen. He was very curt and very brisk. "Sonny's dead. They got him at the Jones Beach toll." Hagen's voice was perfectly calm. "Okay," he said. "Go to Clemenza's house and tell him to come here right away. He'll tell you what to do." Hagen had taken the call in the kitchen, with Mama Corleone bustling around preparing a snack for the arrival of her daughter. He had kept his composure, and the old woman had not noticed anything amiss. Not that she could not have if she wanted to, but in her life with the Don, she had learned it was far wiser not to perceive. That if it was necessary to know something painful, it would be told to her soon enough. And if it was a pain that could be spared her, she could do without. She was quite content not to share the pain of her men. After all, did they share the pain of women? Impassively, she boiled her coffee and set the table with food. In her experience, pain and fear did not dull physical hunger. In her experience, the taking of food dulled pain. She would have been outraged if a doctor had tried to sedate her with a drug, but coffee and a crust of bread were another matter. She came, of course, from a more primitive culture. And so she let Tom Hagen escape to his corner conference room, and once in that room, Hagen began to tremble so violently he had to sit down with his legs squeezed together, his head hunched into his contracted shoulders, hands clasped together between his knees as if he were praying to the devil. He was, he knew now, no fit consigliere for a family at war. He had been fooled, faked out, by the five families in their seeming timidity. They had remained quiet, laying their terrible ambush. They had planned and waited, holding their bloody hands no matter what provocation they had been given. They had waited to land one terrible blow, and they had. Old Genco Abbondanza would never have fallen for it. He would have smelled a rat. He would have smoked them out, tripled his precautions. And through all this, Hagen felt his grief. Sonny had been his true brother, his savior, his hero when they had been boys together. Sonny had never been mean or bullying with him, had always treated him with affection, had taken him in his arms when Solozzo had turned him loose. Sonny's joy at that reunion had been real. That he had grown up to be a cruel and violent and bloody man was, for Hagen, not relevant. He had walked out of the kitchen because he knew he could never tell Mama Corleone about her son's death. He had never thought of her as his mother, as he thought of the Don as his father and Sonny as his brother. His affection for her was like his affection for Freddie and Michael and Connie, the affection for someone who has been kind but not loving. but he could not tell her. In a few short months, she had lost all her sons. Freddie, exiled to Nevada, Michael hiding for his life in Sicily, and now Santino dead. Which of the three had she loved most of all? She had never shown. It was no more than a few minutes. Hagen got control of himself again and picked up the phone. He called Connie's number. It rang for a long time before Connie answered in a whisper. Hagen spoke to her gently. "Connie, this is Tom. Wake your husband up. I have to talk to him." Connie said in a low, frightened voice, "Tom, is Sonny coming here?" "No," Hagen said. "Sonny's not coming there. Don't worry about that. Just wake Carlo up and tell him it's very important I speak to him." Connie's voice was weepy.
"Tom, he beat me up. I'm afraid he'll hurt me again if he knows I called home."
Hagen said gently, "He won't. He'll talk to me and I'll straighten him out. Everything will be okay. Tell him it's very important, very, very important he come to the phone. Okay?" It was almost 5 minutes before Carlo's voice came over the phone, a voice half slurred by whiskey and sleep. Hagen spoke sharply to make him alert. "Listen, Carlo," he said, "I'm going to tell you something very shocking. Now prepare yourself, because when I tell it to you, I want you to answer me very casually, as if it's less than it is. I told Connie it was important, so you have to give her a story. Tell her the family has decided to move you both to one of the houses in the mall and to give you a big job. That the Don has finally decided to give you a chance in the hope of making your home life better. You got that?" There was a hopeful note in Carlo's voice as he answered,
"Yeah, okay."
Hagen went on, "In a few minutes, a couple of my men are going to knock on your door to take you away with them. Tell them I want them to call me first. Just tell them that. Don't say anything else. I'll instruct them to leave you there with Connie, okay?"
"Yeah, yeah, I got it," Carlo said.
His voice was excited. The tension in Hagen's voice seemed to have finally alerted him that the news coming up was going to be really important. Hagen gave it to him straight. "They killed Sonny tonight. Don't say anything. Connie called him while you were asleep and he was on his way over there, but I don't want her to know that even if she guesses it. I don't want her to know it for sure. She'll start thinking it's all her fault. Now I want you to stay with her tonight and not tell her anything. I want you to make up with her. I want you to be the perfect, loving husband, and I want you to stay that way until she has her baby at least. Tomorrow morning somebody, maybe you, maybe the Don, maybe her mother, will tell Connie that her brother got killed, and I want you by her side. Do me this favor, and I'll take care of you in the times to come. You got that?" Carlo's voice was a little shaky.
Sure, Tom, sure. Listen, me and you always got along. I'm grateful. Understand?"
"Yeah," Hagen said. "Nobody will blame your fight with Connie for causing this. Don't worry about that. I'll take care of that." He paused and said softly, encouragingly,
"Go ahead now. Take care of Connie."
He broke the connection. He had learned never to make a threat. The Don had taught him that. But Carlo had gotten the message all right. He was a hair away from death. Hagen made another call to Tessio, telling him to come to the mall in Long Beach immediately. He didn't say why, and Tessio did not ask. Hagen sighed. Now would come the part he dreaded. He would have to waken the Don from his drugged slumber. He would have to tell the man he most loved in the world that he had failed him, that he had failed to guard his domain and the life of his eldest son. He would have to tell the Don everything was lost unless the sick man himself could enter the battle. For Hagen did not delude himself. Only the great Don himself could snatch even a stalemate from this terrible defeat. Hagen didn't even bother checking with Don Corleone's doctors. It would be to no purpose. No matter what the doctors ordered, even if they told him that the Don could not rise from his sickbed on pain of death, He must tell his adoptive father and then follow him. And of course, there was no question about what the Don would do. The opinions of medical men were irrelevant now. Everything was irrelevant now. The Don must be told, and he must either take command or order Hagen to surrender the Corleone power to the five families. And yet, with all his heart, Hagen dreaded the next hour. He tried to prepare his own manner. He would have to be in all ways strict with his own guilt. To reproach himself would only add to the Don's burden. To show his own grief would only sharpen the grief of the Don. To point out his own shortcomings as a wartime consigliere would only make the Don reproach himself for his own bad judgment for picking such a man for such an important post. He must, Hagen knew, tell the news, present his analysis of what must be done to rectify the situation, and then keep silent. His reactions thereafter must be the reactions invited by his Don. If the Don wanted him to show guilt, he would show guilt. If the Don invited grief, he would lay bare his genuine sorrow. Hagen lifted his head at the sound of motors, cars rolling up onto the mall. The Capo Regimes were arriving. He would brief them first, and then he would go up and wake Don Corleone. He got up and went to the liquor cabinet by the desk and took out a glass and bottle. He stood there for a moment, so unnerved he could not pour the liquid from bottle to glass. Behind him he heard the door to the room close softly, and turning, he saw, fully dressed, for the first time since he had been shot, Don Corleone. The Don walked across the room to his huge leather armchair and sat down. He walked a little stiffly. His clothes hung a little loosely on his frame, but to Hagen's eyes, he looked the same as always. It was almost as if, by his will alone, the Don had discarded all external evidence of his still weakened frame. His face was sternly set with all its old force and strength. He sat straight in the armchair, and he said to Hagen, "Give me a drop of anisette." Hagen switched bottles and poured them both a portion of the fiery, licorice-tasting alcohol. It was peasant, homemade stuff, much stronger than that sold in stores, the gift of an old friend who every year presented the Don with a small truckload. "My wife was weeping before she fell asleep," Don Corleone said. "Outside my window, I saw my Capo Regimes coming to the house, and it is midnight. So, consigliere of mine, I think you should tell your Don what everyone knows." Hagen said quietly, "I didn't tell Mama anything. I was about to come up and wake you and tell you the news myself. In another moment, I would have come to waken you." Don Corleone said impassively, "But you needed a drink first." "Yes," Hagen said. "You've had your drink," the Don said. "You can tell me now." There was just the faintest hint of reproach for Hagen's weakness. "They shot Sonny on the causeway," Hagen said. "He's dead." Don Corleone blinked. For just the fraction of a second, the wall of his will disintegrated. The draining of his physical strength was plain on his face. Then he recovered. He clasped his hands in front of him on top of the desk and looked directly into Hagen's eyes. "Tell me everything that happened," he said. He held up one of his hands. "No, wait until Clemenza and Tessio arrive, so you won't have to tell it all again." It was only a few moments later that the two Capo Regimes were escorted into the room by a bodyguard. They saw at once that the Don knew about his son's death because the Don stood up to receive them. They embraced him as old comrades were permitted to do. They all had a drink of anisette, which Hagen poured them before he told them the story of that night. Don Corleone asked only one question at the end. "Is it certain my son is dead?"
Clemenza answered. "Yes," he said. "The bodyguards were of Santino's regime, but picked by me. I questioned them when they came to my house. They saw his body in the light of the toll house. He could not live with the wounds they saw. They placed their lives in forfeit for what they say." Don Corleone accepted this final verdict without any sign of emotion, except for a few moments of silence. Then he said, "None of you are to concern yourselves with this affair. None of you are to commit any acts of vengeance. None of you are to make any inquiries to track down the murderers of my son without my express command. There will be no further acts of war against the five families without my express and personal wish. Our family will cease all business operations and cease to protect any of our business operations until after my son's funeral. Then we will meet here again and decide what must be done. Tonight we must do what we can for Santino. We must bury him as a Christian. I will have friends of mine arrange things with the police and all other proper authorities. Clemenza, you will remain with me at all times as my bodyguard, you and the men of your regime. Tessio, you will guard all other members of my family. Tom, I want you to call Americo Bonazeda and tell him I will need his services at some time during this night, to wait for me at his establishment. It may be an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Do you all understand that?" The three men nodded. Don Corleone said, "Clemenza, get some men and cars and wait for me. I will be ready in a few minutes. Tom, you did well. In the morning, I want Constanzia with her mother. Make arrangements for her and her husband to live in the mall. Have Sandra's friends, the women, go to her house and stay with her. My wife will go there also when I have spoken with her. My wife will tell her the misfortune, and the women will arrange for the church to say their masses and prayers for his soul." The Don got up from his leather armchair. The other men rose with him, and Clemenza and Tessio embraced him again. Hagen held the door open for the Don, who paused to look at him for a moment. Then the Don put his hand on Hagen's cheek, embraced him quickly, and said in Italian, "You've been a good son. You comfort me." Telling Hagen that he had acted properly in this terrible time, the Don went up to his bedroom to speak to his wife. It was then that Hagen made the call to Amerigo Bonazeda for the undertaker to redeem the favor he owed to the Corleones.